Well, let's go ahead and get started. I don't think we're going to be able to make it because we're starting so late, but we're going to try. We are in Hosea 7 today. We're going to try to do 7, 8, 9, and 10. And if we do all that, then I'm just going to have to read. But there's some things in here I want to show you as we go. And as I told you last week, I went ahead and just read all of Hosea, which is a great idea. If you haven't done it yet, just go ahead and you'll get a good sense of it, and then we'll break it down a little as we go. But basically, God is not satisfied with his people and is expressing that through the prophet Hosea. Verse 7, when I would heal Israel, the iniquity of Ephraim is uncovered, and the evil deeds of Samaria, for they dealt falsely. The thief enters in, bandits raid outside, and they do not consider in their hearts that I remember all their wickedness. Now their deeds are all around them. They are before my face. With their wickedness, they make the king glad, and the princes with their lies. They are all adulterers, like an oven heated by the baker, who ceases to stir up fire from the kneading of the dough until it is leavened. On the day of our king, the princess became sick with the heat of wine. He stretches out his hand with scoffers, for their hearts are like an oven, and as they approach their plotting, their anger smolders all night. In the morning, it burns like a flaming fire. All of them are hot like an oven, and they consume their rulers. All the kings have fallen. None of them calls on me. All the kings have fallen. You've got to remember that during this time that he's talking about, it was a 25-year time period, and they had five kings. So 5 years, people were being assassinated. People were, but none of these, out of all of these, they kept churning and churning, and none of them were good kings. Questions?
So the Assyria has, at this point, Assyria hasn't come yet. Nope. The besetting is just about what's going on within the...
Right, within the northern tribe, and Assyria hasn't come in and taken them. He's saying, they're coming. Mm-hmm. They're coming, they're coming, they're coming. And when he says you have no kings, he's also alluding to the fact that they're not really leading the kings that they have. They're looking to Egypt, they're looking to Assyria, they're looking to all these outside places, not to God, to protect them and to give them favor and to do all these things. They're living in a time of great prosperity, of peace, relative peace, but it's because they've made all these deals with all these neighbors and things to keep themselves safe, but they're not dealing with God. And in that, they're assuming that the reason they have all this prosperity and wealth and peace and all that is because of their other gods, their idol worship, and they attribute all of this prosperity to them and not to God.
Right.
And so God is about to turn and say, you really want to go with them, then you can go with them, and I'll show you what it's really like when you have no God. That's basically what he's saying. I'm trying to get to a place here. Where did I put that? Sometimes I read too many different versions, and so I'm looking for one particular... There it is. It's the next one. Ephraim mixes himself with the nations. Ephraim has become a cake not turned. A cake not turned. Now, don't think of a cake. This is a half-baked cake. And what I want you to picture in that time, they would do like a pancake, kind of like a tortilla. And so he is saying Ephraim is like a half-baked cake. He's burnt on one side because he's been left on the heat too long. And so that side's no good because it's all burnt. The other side is still moist and unbaked, so you can't use it. So there's nothing good about you is what he's telling them. You're a half-baked cake. I can't eat the burnt side, and the other side's not done, so I can't eat it. There's nothing worthwhile in you. And that's the image that he's trying to give across to these people. Isn't that nice? I love that one.
That's where you get the phrase half-baked.
That I don't know. I don't know. It didn't allude to that. But
I think it's their attempt to mix in truth with lies.
Right.
In their belief system.
Too. Right. Right, because they're not following God. The priests aren't, the people aren't. Everybody's saying that all the things that we have are coming from here, and they're not. They're coming from God, but God's going to eventually take all that away from them. Verse 9, strangers devour his strength, yet he does not know it. Gray hairs also are sprinkled on him, yet he does not know it. I think I did this one. Hold on. Yeah, I love this. This is from John Trapp. In 1654, You're going to love this one too. Yes, gray hairs are here and there on him, yet he does not know it. Israel is as foolish as an old man. This is from John Trapp, who thinks and acts like he is still young. He began but to decline and decay as a man doth when he grows towards 50. Yeah, I thought that was kind of cute myself. And I thought it'd go over really good in your class. So, you know, he's talking about a foolish man. He's still trying to act young and full of strength and full of vigor and all that kind of stuff. But he's a man kind of old, kind of towards 50. I like that one.
Oh, yeah. The old men should have knowledge, but they don't.
They're still acting like they're kids.
Yeah.
And knowledge is great, but it's not necessarily the knowledge. They have the knowledge. They have the ability to have the knowledge. They're just not using what God has given them. The knowledge is available to them, but it's not. Which also brings me to another one. I know I wrote this down someplace. I'll find it. It's in the next chapter. Though the pride of Israel testifies against him, yet they have neither returned to the Lord their God, nor have they sought him for all this. So Ephraim has become like a silly dove without sense. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. When they go, I will spread my net over them. I will bring them down like the birds of the sky. I will chastise them in accordance with the proclamation of their assembly. Woe to them, for they have strayed from me. Destruction is theirs, for they have rebelled against me. I would redeem them, but they speak lies against me, and they do not cry to me from their heart. When they wail on their beds for the sake of grain and new wine, they assemble themselves, they turn away from me. Although I trained and strengthened their arm, yet they devise evil against me. They turn, but not upward. They are like a deceitful bow. Their princes will fall by the sword because of the insolence of their tongue. This will be their derision in the land of Egypt. When he talks about they are like a deceitful bow, what did yours say, Miss Carolyn? I think I was reading in verse 16.
They return, but not to the Most High. They are like a deceitful bow. Their prince shall fall by the sword for the rage of their tongue. This shall be their division in the land of Egypt.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I have. And I think that, like a deceitful bow, it's like you've got a bow that doesn't shoot straight.
He says faulty.
Yeah, faulty. It's you have something that's extremely dangerous, but you cannot trust it. You can't trust it to do what it's supposed to do. So, you know, they turn, but not upward. They don't turn to me. They turn to all the things around them, all the things that I've given them. And he's going to bring this out later as to how the people in the north are looking to the idols, but the people in the south are building big cities and fortified cities. So they're trusting more in their cities and themselves because they can build fortified cities.
Real quick, in 13, sure. Did you say, I would have redeemed them or I have redeemed them?
I would redeem them.
Well, see, mine says, I have redeemed them. I just found that in.
I have redeemed them, but they speak lies against me?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, mine says, I would. Not sure why. I didn't click that one. Chapter 8. Put the trumpet to your lips like an eagle. The enemy comes against the house of the Lord. Now, he's talking about, he's sounding the alarm, basically, that Assyria is coming. Because they have transgressed against my covenant and rebelled against my law. They cry out to me, my God, we of Israel know thee. Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have appointed princes, but I did not know it. With their silver and gold, they have made idols for themselves, that they might be cut off. He has rejected your calf, O Samaria, saying, my anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence? For from Israel is even this, a craftsman made it, so it is not God. Surely the calf of Samaria will be broken to pieces, for they sow the wind and they reap the whirlwind. The standing grain has no heads, yet it yields no grain. Should it yield, strangers would swallow it up. What does all that mean?
The
Calves Samaria, would that be the golden calves that they made on Sunday?
And what he's saying to this is, you know, they have set up kings, but not by me. They're not my kings. They've done this because, and he's saying the same thing to us, that you have chosen people to lead your country or to lead you, but they're not my people. You know, you're choosing people by your own knowledge and by your own, what you think is going to be best for you, but not what is best for God. And he says, Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. Talking about Assyria, they have set up kings, but not with their gold, with their silver and gold, have made idols for themselves that they might be cut off. And has rejected your calf, O Samaria, saying, my anger burns against them. He's saying that in verse 6, a craftsman made it, so it is not God. Because it's made by a craftsman. It's not, you know, this is just a thing that's going to be, and surely that calf will be broken to pieces. So you're going to see it gone. It's not a God. It's not something that you can actually worship. And I like this part where it says, they sow the wind and they reap the whirlwind. Let me read this to you. It will seem to Israel that the judgment they receive is worse than the sin they committed. This isn't true in the sense of God being worse to us than our sin deserves, but it is true in how judgment feels. This is usually because our sin is sown over a long period of time, but often reaped in a contracted period of judgment. So you may go years and years and years and years and continue to sin and continue to sin without the judgment of God, and then when it comes down to one little tiny thing, you're like, oh my gosh, this is just horrible. How could this judgment come upon me, which is what he's saying here. But you sowed the wind expecting to reap this harvest. Well, the harvest that you're going to reap is going to be, in my mind, is going to be the tornado that comes through with destruction and death. And they're going to see that when Assyria comes through and takes them away.
I find it interesting that this calf, the worshiping of the calves, you think through tradition or some kind of reading, it's just interesting that Aaron did that. He did that at the time of getting the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. And yet Jeroboam started it up again. So I'm wondering, did they take this tradition that they knew about and just thought it was religious, or did they not know and just went with what the Babylon, the Baal? I guess that's Baal.
They were in my mind, what they're doing is what everybody around them does.
Yeah.
So they're saying, we have more children. A lot of it's fertility, and we're going to see this in the next chapter too. A lot of this is fertility. So if we do all these things and worship this God and worship this God, most of those were fertility gods, then we'll have lots of children and be very prosperous.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize that their children, and God's going to...
God is their fertility God.
Is their fertility God. And I'm trying to find the place where it says... that's right, yeah. That's it. It's the last chapter in chapter 10. Turn to chapter 10 real quick. Look down about, this doesn't say exactly what I wanted it to say, what it said in another one. I'm trying to find it. Oh, here it is. Look in verse 14. Give them, O Lord. He wants to pray for the people, but he doesn't know what to pray. And he says, give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. That's a blessing. You would think that's a curse. What does yours say? Somebody say something different.
You said
9:14.
9:14.
I'm looking at 10 and going backwards.
Yes.
9:14. And what he's saying is, give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? He's asking that question. And then he prays, give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. And he's saying that because he doesn't want them to have children that would have to go through the mishap that they've already caused upon themselves, and that is coming. So the best blessing I can give you is that you'll never have children, because your children will have to go through this misfortune. So, I mean, that's just a really harsh, harsh. But part of this is because of what they want the most are children, mm-hmm. and prosperity, big families,
and food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Verse 8 in chapter 8. Israel is swallowed up. They are now among the nations like a vessel in which no one delights. For they have gone up to Assyria like a wild donkey all alone. Ephraim has hired lovers even though they hire allies among the nations, now I will gather them up, and they will begin to diminish because of the burdens of the king and the princes. Since Ephraim has multiplied altars for sin, they have become altars of sinning for him. Though I wrote for him 10,000 precepts of my law, they are regarded as a strange thing. As for my sacrificial gifts, they sacrifice the flesh and eat it. But the Lord has taken no delight in them. Now he will remember his iniquity and punish them for their sins. They will return to Egypt. For Israel has forgotten his maker and built palaces, and Judah has multiplied fortified cities. But I will send fire on its cities that it may consume its palatial dwellings. And so what he's saying here is both to Israel, they sacrifice to, and but when they offer the sacrifice, then they eat the sacrifice. They don't really give it to the God. They don't really give it to God. They eat it themselves. And they basically don't know who God is. When it says before, when you were talking about the calf, when you read that in the Hebrew, it literally says, he says, your calf is rejected. Literally, it means your calf stinks.
Yeah.
Let me see if I've got, this is from Spurgeon again, one of my favorites. If this be the word of God, what will become of some of you who have not read it for the last month? And what he's talking about is the same thing we have here, is that you've turned away from me. You say you know me. You say you know who I am. And in Jesus' time, Jesus also said, but they didn't really know God. It will be the same for many churchgoers today. Jesus said, many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. That's in Matthew 7:22. But let me go back to Spurgeon real quick. If this be the word of God, what will become of some of you who have not read it for the last month? Most people treat the Bible very politely. When they get home, they lay it up on the drawer, right next to a drawer, till next Sunday morning. When it comes out again for a little bit of a treat, and it goes to chapel. That is all the poor Bible gets in the way of an airing. This is your style of entertaining. This is your style of entertaining this heavenly messenger. There is dust enough on some of your Bibles to write damnation with your fingers.
Wow.
Tell us how you really think, Spurgeon. But what he's saying is, God has given you the knowledge that you need. And if the last time you opened this book was last Sunday, I've given it to you. It's right there in front of you. And it's not coming from me, and it's not coming from Pastor. It's coming from God's Word. There's, I can't remember where it was, maybe it's in the next one, where basically God says, I wrote this. This is a message from me. And what he's, we'll get to it here in a minute and I'll find it, but he's saying, I wrote this and I'm giving it to you. Why won't you listen? Why are you, you've got the knowledge, you know what's right, but you're not listening to me and you don't have a relationship with me. And because you think you do, because you're going through the motions and you're going to church and you're doing the sacrifices, but you don't really have a relationship with me, and without that relationship, then it's nothing. So that's where he's going. Questions, comments? Oh, we might make it. Chapter 9. Do not rejoice, O Israel, in exultation like the nations, for you have played the harlot, forsaking your God. You have loved harlots, earning on every threshing floor. Now, what he's bringing into play here is the threshing floor. That's what they're going to eat. The wine is what they're going to drink. This is getting to the real root of what they love. They love to eat. They love to drink. And you have loved harlots' earnings on every threshing floor. Verse 2, threshing floor and wine press will not feed them. And the new wine will fail them. So he's saying, I'm going to get your attention through what you really do love. They will not remain in the Lord's land, but Ephraim will return to Egypt. And in Assyria, they will eat unclean foods. They will not pour out libations of wine to the Lord. Their sacrifices will not please him. Their bread will be like mourner's bread. All who eat of it will be defiled. For their bread will be for themselves alone. It will be for themselves alone. It will not enter the house of the Lord. What will you do on the day of the appointed festival and on the day of the feast of the Lord? For behold, they will go because of destruction. Egypt will gather them up. Memphis will bury them. Weeds will take over their treasures of silver. Thorns will be in their tents. So Some commentators believe that this was actually preached during a time of one of the festivals. He's saying, you're not getting this festivals right. The festival is for the Lord, and yet you have just made this debauchery. You've taken the idols and you're offering to them. And so what he's saying is the harlots on the threshing floors, they were not only fertility gods, but gods that they would ask for a good harvest, for rain, for sun, for all those types of things. So he's building all that in. Verse 7, the days of punishment have come. The days of retribution have come. Let Israel know this. The prophet is a fool. The inspired man is demented because of the grossness of your iniquities and because of your hostility is so great. So that's what Hosea was hearing, is that the prophet is a fool. Ephraim was a watchman with my God, a prophet, yet the snare of the birdcatcher is in all his ways. And there is only hostility in the house of his God. They have gone deep in depravity. In the days of Gibeah, we will remember their iniquity. He will punish their sins. And I think I had this. I want to show you one thing about chapter 9. I should have shown this earlier. In chapter 9, 1 through 3, it was a basic judgment. 4 through 5 is an invalid worship. So we're showing them how they're worshiping invalid. Hosea 6 through 7 is the results, and 9 is the verdict. And that they have gone deep into depravity, the days of Gibeah. He will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. And Gibeah, we had talked about before in Judges 19, describes the horrific crimes of perversion and violence in Israel in the days of the judges. Verse 10, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I love this. Look at the imagery. You're in the wilderness. You're hungry, you're thirsty, and you find grapes. That's like walking up and saying, I'm out in the middle of the woods, and think of something that you really love. And there's a Coke machine. Or you're parched, you're really wanting something, and there's something that you really want right out there in the middle of nowhere. We're kind of used to that. But he's putting this imagery. You're in the wilderness, and I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your forefathers as the earliest fruit on the fig tree. So this is something that he relished. This is something that he loved, that was a treat. And so I saw your forefathers, the earliest fruit on the fig tree in its first season. But they became Baal Peor and devoted themselves to shame. And they became as detestable as that which they loved. Now, what is Baal Peor? Anyway, it's a place in Numbers 25. It's associated with sexual immorality and idolatry. As for Ephraim, their glory will fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, and no conception. Though they bring up their children, yet I will bereave them until not a man is left. So this is where he's getting into this part that you're going to lose your children, you're going to lose your inheritance. So not a man is left. Yes, woe to them indeed when I depart from them. So when I leave you and turn my back on you like you turned your back on me. Ephraim, as I have seen, is planted in a pleasant meadow like Tyre. But Ephraim will bring out his children for slaughter. Give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? And it says, give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts so that they won't have children that would have to go through this. Verse 15, that's the best he can pray for them. Verse 15, all their evil is at Gilgal, which we talked about before. Indeed, I came to hate them there because of the wickedness of their deeds. I will drive them out of my house. I will love them no more. All their princes are rebels. Ephraim is stricken. Their root is dried up. They will bear no fruit. Even though they bear children, I will slay the precious ones of their womb. My God will cast them away because they have not listened to him, and they will be wanderers among the nations. And the northern tribe is what they are. They are wanderers among the nations. They are no longer a nation of Israel. Questions, comments?
Gilgal, that was where they had where the priests, where the priests were at, right?
That's where priests were originally during Isaiah Elijah and Elisha.
Right.
That was a place where they would go. It was a seminary.
Right.
It's where they trained priests.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got turned. Yeah. And it was, as mentioned in Hosea 4:15, which I brought this up the last time, God despised the city of Gilgal as a center of idolatry in Israel. At one time, Gilgal was a place where prophets were trained under Elijah and Elisha, but in Hosea's day, it had become a center of false worship.
That's when, kind of like, I think during the time of Ahab and Jezebel, mm-hmm. when a lot of that happened.
Well,
they brought in a lot, because she had a father that was a Baal priest.
Right,
that
right.
came into the land, and they, where they killed a bunch of, what, 70-something priests?
Where Elijah did.
Yeah, well, he, well now they're, but now Jezebel had true priests killed.
Oh, okay.
Two, so, okay. And then, yeah, but Elijah did kill, well, God did.
God did,
yeah. Burn them up.
Yeah, but. Snap that finger. And chapter 10. Let's see if we can do this real quick, because I think it's going to make more sense when we come back. It'll be a little more hopeful, and people won't have dry breaths, and we aren't going to call their children. So it'd be better to kind of get there. Israel is a luxuriant vine. He produces fruit for himself. The more his fruit, the more altars he made. The richer his land, the better he made the sacred pillars. Their heart is faithless. So he's saying, all the things that I have given you, You're not giving those to me. I have produced all these things, and then you're supposed to give me my portion. But you don't. You just take it to yourself. And so I've given you all these things, and you go, look how good I did. And then you just take it to yourself and say, it's all me. I did it all myself. And then you just keep ingratiating yourself and buying bigger houses and more stuff. Verse 2, their heart is faithless. Now they bear their guilt. The Lord will break down their altars and destroy their sacred pillars. Surely now they will say, we have no king, for we do not revere the Lord. As for the king, what can he do for us? They speak mere words, the worthless oaths they make. They make covenants, and judgment sprouts like poisonous weeds of the furrows of the field. The inhabitants of Samaria will fear for the calf of Ben-Haven. Indeed, its people will mourn for it. And its idolatrous priests will cry out over it, over its glory, since it has departed from it. The thing itself will be carried to Assyria. So they're saying this. All the things that they worship, all the gods that they love, they're made of silver and gold. They're all going to be carried away by the people who plunder them. So they're all going to go away. This calf is going to go away to Assyria. As tribute to King Jareb, Ephraim will be seized with shame, and Israel will be ashamed of its own counsel. Verse 7, Samaria will be cut off with her king like a stick on the surface of the water. Also the high places of Avon, the sin of Israel, will be destroyed. Thorn and thistle will grow in their altars. Then they will say to the mountains, cover us, and to the hills, fall on us. For the days of Gibeah you have sinned. From the days of Gibeah you have sinned, O Israel. There they stand. Will not the battle against the sons of iniquity overtake them in Gibeah? When it is my desire, I will chastise them, and the people will be gathered against them when they are bound for their double guilt. And Ephraim is a trained heifer that loves to thresh, but I will come over her fair neck with a yoke. I will harness Ephraim. Judah will plow. Jacob will harrow for himself. Let me stop right there for just a second. Let me see if I can get it. I thought I had something on that. What he's doing here is he's showing what another word picture about plowing and sowing and all that. Harrowed field is one that hasn't been plowed up in a long time, and so. You know, you're going to put the plow to it, and it's going to break itself open. And if you were that field, you would not want to be broke open too. But what he's saying is, I'm going to break you open. I'm going to uncover these things so that things get uncomfortable. Verse 12. Sow with a view to righteousness, reap in accordance with kindness. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord until He comes to rain righteousness on you. You have plowed wickedness, you have reaped injustice, you have eaten the fruit of lies. Because you have trusted in your way, therefore the tumult will arise among your people, and all your fortresses will be destroyed. As Solomon destroyed Beth our bell on the day of battle when mothers were dashed in pieces with their children. Thus it will be done to you at Bethel because of your great wickedness. At dawn, the king of Israel will be completely cut off. Go and have a good day, and peace and justice be to you. Man, that's just rough. So, turn from your wicked ways. Questions, comments?
All this is coming from a human.
But it's coming from God.
I know, but to the people, they see the human.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, I don't think it would be any better received today than it was back then if somebody comes out and starts telling us all the stuff that we're doing wrong, and if you don't straighten up, this is what's going to happen to you.
Yeah. It doesn't. I mean, there are people that do that now.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a guy at work this week, and he just can't get over the fact that, well, it was written by men. And a lot of people believe, by the hand of a man. So he thinks, and a lot of people, and of course I try to explain, think about the law. I said, why would man make up all that stuff that's in the Old Testament to make himself do? Why would anybody do that? So that's the only thing I could come up with, so I don't know if we've done any good or not.
Other questions? Comments? See you in 2 weeks, and we'll hit chapter 11.